Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Tony Morita to the podcast. Dr. Morita serves as pastor of preaching and vision at Imago Dei Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's also the director of theological training for Acts 29, dean of Grimke Seminary, and a council member of the Gospel Coalition. Tony, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Hey, it's great to be back with you, Dr. Allen.
Yeah, listen, good to catch up here in the context of this podcast. And our listeners have heard you on here a time or two before, and today they'll have the opportunity to do so again. We're talking about the topic, Pastoring in Turbulent Times, and we're going to build the conversation really from your recent book, Christ-Centered Conflict Resolution, A Guide for Turbulent Times. And so I look forward to that conversation that we'll get into in just a moment. But before we do, how about a word update on you and your family and your ministry?
Yeah, overall, man, we are blessed. It's been a challenging time, like everyone else, during COVID-19. Family's healthy. Our kids overall are doing well. We have five kids now, ages 15 to 20. My youngest daughter yesterday turned 16. So I've got like three kids learning to drive. So a lot going on under our roof. But yeah, love my wife. Love our church. Our church family's actually responded wonderfully during this time. We've had, a lot of pastors that I talked to are just struggling. People complaining, even leaving the church over how they're handling either the pandemic restrictions or what they've said or not said about some of the racial tensions in society. I've worked really hard to just encourage our church to remain unified during this time. And overall, I'm just really, really proud of our church on how they've responded. And as we keep making changes, week by week, as things are changed, restrictions are changed, they've just been flexible. And so we've only been meeting partially indoors for 3 or 4 weeks. We plan on having outdoor gatherings beginning August 30th. And again, they're just adapting to the changes without a lot of complaining. And for that, I'm really grateful.
Well, listen, thank the Lord for that. We are recording this conversation the first week of August 2020, and we still are in the middle of the COVID-19 challenges, epidemic and challenges that resulted from it. And so, Tony, I'm encouraged to hear a good word out of your church there and your ministry there and your family. You mentioned you got many you're teaching to drive. I am now five kids, ages 17 to 12. And so these are full and joyous years for us as well. Hey, listen, tell us one other word here. Flesh out what's on your mind here in the season ahead by way of writing projects.
Yeah, so I just left my office where I was reading out loud a new book that I'm writing on church membership. And so I left three people in there continuing to read that. So that's the next book in the hopper. I wrote Christ-Centered Conflict Resolution during the pandemic. And after that, with Jared Bumpers there with you at Midwestern, he and I are going to write a book, 40 Questions on Preaching. So that'll be the third book, Lord willing, that I'll tackle this year. Beyond that, I don't have any other books in mind. I've finished all the commentaries that I was assigned to write in our series. So, but eager to get this membership book finished. Hope that's a blessing to the church. And then also eager to tackle some of the questions on preaching that I haven't written on before. So that's kind of how Jared and I are planning on breaking those questions apart. He's going to write on more of the foundational pieces, and I'm going to write on some of the other issues related to preaching.
Well, we look forward to getting that work in hand. So, Tony, we're talking today about pastoring in turbulent times. And again, we're taking the conversation from your recent book, Christ-Centered Conflict Resolution. So I guess on the front end, tell us what prompted the book.
Yeah, this is not necessarily the book that I would say is in my wheelhouse in terms of subject matter. I was writing this other book on church membership when our friends at B&H called and said, we know during this COVID lockdown, families are in conflict, at least some of them more than usual due to proximity and time together. Churches are in conflict over changes and decisions that are made. There just seems to be a lot of conflict. We'd like for a pastor to write a small, accessible book really focused on the heart, and that would remain Christ-centered in its application. Would you consider writing it? And at the time, I had 9 people living under our roof. We have a house guest, and my nephew was living with us, and I had 2 dogs. So I was like, I need a book on conflict. You know, I don't want to write one, but I need one. So that just set me thinking about, okay, what is it that we say to people when we counsel them, church members, what is it that we do when we try to mediate a conflict between, you know, people in the community and other leaders or contacts, neighborhoods. And really, it was kind of a group project. Our elders got together, and particularly our counseling pastor, Pastor Kent, and we just said, what are some of the essential New Testament passages about relationships and conflict resolution? And let's try to write that as clearly as we can. A small book, it's only 20,000 words, that would be a book that pastors could give to people as they're in a conflict. As Pastor Kent at our church says, when you're in a conflict, you don't want a big book. You want something that you can read in a sitting. You can meditate on that, pray through that, and hopefully it would have an impact on you. So my book is in some ways a short summary of Ken Sandy's famous book, The Peacemaker, which I've been really blessed by through the years, and some own pastoral thoughts about that. So it wasn't a book that I had proposed. Hey, I would like to write this book. It was a book that I was asked to write. And having done so, I'm really glad I did, because it was really good for me. And it's been useful already in the life of our church. Because relationship occupies such a prominent place in the scriptures. Often I think our discipleship of people has been heavily cerebral, doctrinal, which is important and foundational. But again, just learning how to live in the context of community in a healthy way is very important. So that's how it came about.
So you mentioned that the invitation came in the context of COVID-19. And I want you to tease that out a bit, not so much the genesis for the book as it relates to what prompted B&H to reach out to you, but what about this moment, this COVID-19 moment, lends itself towards conflict in the church and perhaps conflict in the home and the workplace as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in addition to being restricted to our homes, right after the book came out, because I wrote the book in less than a month, and then they published it in less than a month. That was another reason they asked me to write it. They said, well, somebody can turn it around quickly. So I just got in task mode, and the Enneagram 3 went crazy, and I finished the book. But when it was published, then all of the racial tensions that we all know about became the new thing. Like it overtook the global pandemic. But the book has relevance to that as well. You know, as we think about, particularly in the church, as you have diverse people who react to these things in society differently, who are in small group to each other, for example, there really needs to be some guide for how they interact with each other, learn from each other, forgive one another, that sort of thing. But back to the original desire, it was this, you know, we now have mothers, for example, at home with their kids all day long, learning how to do homeschool. We may have dads who are now working at home. We don't have the regular social life that kids enjoyed, which gave parents space. We're just in each other's business all the time. And that can be challenging, especially the piece about not having an outlet to do things like play sports or even watch sports, not to be able to go to school, for parents not to be able to drop their kids off at school and go do their business, their work. And it created a lot of challenges. And then, again, within the church, we had to make decisions about meeting and not meeting. And now I think in our political climate, there's so many reasons or causes for conflict now, whether it's wearing face masks or the distancing rules or which philosophy we adopt on, what we should be doing right now. So, and that's all fine and good. Like, I think those discussions are important, but how we handle them are important. And what often happens in conflict is we either choose avoiding these conversations or attacking one another rather than humbly, gently, lovingly trying to understand and work through matters, which can be a really important process of growth in our lives.
So when we're thinking about pastoring in turbulent times and conflict resolution, I guess many of us, our mind goes to the how. Like, how do we maintain peace? How do we pursue reconciliation? But I want to ask the prior question, and that is the question why. Many people perhaps are listening to this conversation, Tony, and they're fractured from a loved one, they're fractured from their pastor, they're fractured from other people in their congregation. And perhaps they've adopted, whether knowingly or not, kind of a passive-aggressive approach to these things and just keeping their head down, going the other direction. But they're reluctant to actually initiate reconciliation. So make the case for why that's important.
Well, you know, the book's called Christ-Centered Conflict Resolution. And as I say in the introduction, like, you may have picked up the book because it said conflict or conflict resolution. But really, the book is primarily about Christ and submitting to his lordship and having affections for Christ. And that's, to me, that's where it always, you know, the issue is always within the heart and then it's lived out. And I think when a person is adoring Jesus, when Jesus, you know, being in Christ is their primary identity and they're submitting to his word, then we want to follow him. And Jesus has a whole lot to say to us about not harboring bitterness and not being angry or murdering someone in our hearts, about interrupting a worship service to go make to go reconcile with a brother, to practice church discipline, to do these restorative acts in relationships. And so we can't pick and choose the words of Jesus of what we're going to listen to and follow. And the fact is, he says a whole lot about relationships, especially in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, this is Preaching and Preachers podcast. I've said to guys before, if you preach on the Sermon on the Mount, prepare to do a lot of counseling, because that section in Matthew is just, it will stir people up if they're honest about their own lives. So to me, it really begins with Christ. It ends with Christ. I need to be right with other people because Jesus is Lord, and maintaining peace is a big deal to Jesus. You just look through the list, for example, in the Beatitudes. We got the one that comes to mind immediately, that blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And I just think that's a marvelous thought, that one of the ways we show the character of God is by going to make peace. And that makes sense when you put it in the broader framework of the biblical narrative, that we're headed to a new creation where there will be total peace and the Prince of Peace will be adored forever. And so I think as a son of God, I want to reflect the character of God. And one of the ways I do that is by pursuing peace, as Paul says, as far as it is possible, right? We know that in this fallen world, we won't always have resolution, but we do initiate it and we do seek it out as much as we can. So for me, it's really a lordship issue. It really just does come down to that.
Well, granting that and believing that, that is a lordship issue and that it is a Christ-like, the Christ-like thing to do to pursue reconciliation. Help us to think through what are the necessary steps or things to foster peaceful relationships.
Yeah, I think most of it, again, is back to what are the ordinary means of grace that God has given us. If all of this is really going to flow out of my heart, then what I need to be focused on is my heart. So this means prayer. This means, you know, my time in the scriptures. This means worshiping with my family of faith. This means learning to live out a biblical vision of wisdom, displaying the fruit of the Spirit. One of my favorite passages, I begin the book with this passage in James 3 and 4, where he describes at the end of chapter 3 kind of the fruits of wisdom. And we often think of wisdom in the abstract. But James makes it really practical, the wisdom from above, he calls it, versus wisdom from below. And that wisdom from below is characterized by jealousy, you know, and selfish ambition, disorder. But he says the wisdom from above is peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And I think when it gets to the how, it's just analyzing my life, analyzing my relationships, and asking some probing questions about, am I pursuing gentleness? That is there a warmth about me? Am I open to reason? Can I listen and not be offended easily? Right? Can I have an awkward conversation without getting angry with another person? Can I be full of mercy? And so I think as you think about how to handle conflict, we often want to point the finger at the person who we think has done the wrong thing to us, rather than really starting with myself. And that's a harder thing to do, to examine whether or not, as Jesus said, we have a log in our own eye, while all the time we're looking at the speck in our brother's eye. So really to foster peaceful relationships, I think it's all the way back to the heart again. And asking ourselves, like, what is it that's controlling me? What am I desiring? David Pallison, the late biblical counselor, said that cravings underlie conflicts. And he takes that from James 4. What is it, you know, that causes wars and fights among you? It's that your passions are at war within you. That whenever I have an unhealthy craving for something, even something that might be good, like comfort or food, and I don't get it, it often leads to conflicts with others. So I'm just trying to point people back again and again and again to the heart, back again and again to the Lordship of Jesus. And so we try not to write a real step-oriented book, even though toward the end of the book, the last chapter, I have like five things to do in order to be a peacemaker, with me first being the first M to kind of deal with the stuff I just mentioned. Minor is the second M. So is there something here that's been done, but it's a minor offense that needs to be overlooked? The third M is major. So some offenses cannot be overlooked. They have to be dealt with. Those are the hard ones. They require a process of restoration. The fourth M is material. Does this offense require restitution related to property or money or other rights? I use Zacchaeus as an example. Like, he'd wronged people, and he needed to do more than just say he was sorry. He was going to pay it back, you know, multi times over. And then the fifth M is mediation. Does this offense call for another party to assist in peacemaking? Sometimes we need help, and that could be a pastor, it could be a friend, it could be a counselor, a teacher, or whatever. So hopefully that section will be helpful for those who are looking for some real practical steps.
Yes, well, helpful it is indeed. You know, most of our listeners to this podcast are local church servants, pastors, staff members, seminary students, et cetera. And, you know, you don't have to be in ministry very long to brush up against conflict in the local church. And I guess it would be helpful for us, Tony, if you could outline briefly some of the common conflicts, either the conflicts themselves by name or more descriptively types of conflicts that show up in the local church.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think this is one of the biggest challenges for young pastors if they haven't had a lot of experience in the church dealing with conflict. And it's hard to do it without doing it. You can be trained in some of it, but I think it really is kind of like you need on-the-job training. The types of conflicts for me that we're often dealing with, one category I would just call family. So parenting challenges or marriages, those are ongoing issues, especially in terms of parenting, broken homes or single parent homes, or those who have adopted children. There are particular challenges that often come in those settings. And then more issues arising out of the heart is anxiety and depression. We just are dealing with people with varying levels of those issues, from, you know, not very severe to quite severe. And a lot of that bleeds into their relationships in the home. Currently, it's a loss of job or a fear of not having a job. Some of those issues also can foster a context of conflict. I'll tell you the one that we deal with now that's a new one, I think, in the history of pastoral care, is within small groups. We're facing this this thing where people in a small group might say something on social media that they won't say to their small group, or that they won't say to another church member. And so it's almost like they live a duplicitous life. They're like, man, I really like you, but I don't like social media you.
Right.
And why do you say, you know, why do you say these things about politicians that you don't say in our group? Or why do you say these things about race or you don't say about race that you don't say in our group? And so that's where we're navigating a lot of our kind of church conflicts right now, on how to do healthy, small group ministry that's honest and candid, but also loving and gracious. Those are probably the ones that come to mind immediately.
So let me tease out that last point a little bit here, and our time is quickly coming to an end, but I do want to go back to one point. You mentioned liking people, but not liking the social media version of people. And so let's kind of bring that into the conversation here on reconciliation. To what extent do you encourage people to seek reconciliation, not based upon an adverse act or word that has been done or said by someone to you directly, but just through social media posts that frankly are uncharitable, unkind, perhaps even harsh, and you are offended by that? Help us think through that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Man, it's a hard one because I want to say, like, I as an overseer of Imago Dei Church, I am more concerned about our people than I am the broader Christian world, though I'm concerned about them too. I'm not going to be, though, as quick to probably call out people outside of my church if I see something that's offensive. I might, but I don't feel the need for that. But our pastors do care for our church. We care about the witness of our church, and therefore we care about what is said on social media. We care about the unity of the church, and we know that our words, whether they're verbal or online, can be divisive in the church. So we don't want to necessarily be micromanagers or the police on this issue, but we do want to encourage edifying speech online and verbal. So I drip that in my sermons. So now it's become normal when we're talking about the sins of speech or the ways we use our words to bless others, that we just put that caveat, you know, that it's what you say or what you say online, because it's now the new normal. I think if there's something that someone has said that I'm offended by, need clarity on, I just want to ask them about it humbly. I've had people in our church ask me things that I've said, and I appreciate that. You know, just a quick email. Hey, you said this. Can you just help me understand what I meant by that? What you meant by that? Did you mean this? Or can we have a cup of coffee and talk about it? Hopefully, as a leader, we're cultivating a culture where people feel comfortable asking questions. Because the fact is, we are held accountable for our words, and we shouldn't be flippant on social media, and we need to recognize that those words are also there. They're online for the whole world. So we need to be especially careful in those contexts. I think our struggle has been people seeming to appear a bit differently than they appear online. And that one's been a strange one. And it's required some awkward conversations, which all conflict resolution requires awkward conversations. And we just got to be okay having them. The good news is I have found that the Lord shows up in those moments in special ways, because he really appreciates the work of peacemaking. And I think he blesses it.
Well, Dr. Morita, we'll have to leave it at that. Thank you for joining me on Preaching and Preachers. I do want to commend your book, Christ-Centered Conflict Resolution, A Guide for Turbulent Times, out by B&H Publishers and available wherever books are sold. It's been a delight to have you, my friend.
Yes, sir, Dr. Allen. Appreciate you. Love seeing what's happening at Midwestern.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.